Now calling A24 1334, Ryan Gary Sanford versus Bethany Lynn Bailby.
Hey, good morning, Council. As you probably each know, you'll have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and Council for Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are on a Zoom.gov platform here today, so you should be able to see the clock in one of your upper corners in the gallery view. Can you both see the clock?
I can, Your Honor. As well,
Okay.
I can, Your Honor.
Great. So that'll reset according to the time you have for your argument. I would ask each of you to please introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument for our audio recording and identify your client at that time. Please mute yourself, but leave your video on when you are not speaking. And if anyone has any concerns or issues with the technology at any point, please let me know. We'll stop and we'll address that because we want to be sure that we hear from everyone who's here today. So with that, I believe the clock should have 15 minutes on it, and counsel for appellant, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jonathan Engel, I represent the appellant in this matter, Bethany Schrote. And this is a family court matter, as the court's well aware. When looking at Minnesota statutes, there's clear instruction for how to decide issues of custody and parenting time. The court must consider and evaluate all relevant factors. A blanket statement from the trial court saying that all factors have been considered is insufficient. In making the analysis for custody and parenting time issues, the court must make detailed findings on each of the factors and explain how each factor led to its conclusion.
Well,
And
let's stop right there, Mr. Engel. I read the court's file in this matter, and I think it's replete with plenty of findings as far as this custodial issue is concerned. But let's start with sole legal custody. It appears to me that both parties initially contemplated or considered joint legal. In fact, that was supported by the evaluator. But as time went on, even your own client indicated that it was not workable. So when you have a client that says, no, we can't make decisions together, and that's reflected in the district court order, what are you attempting to tell us is missing from the findings fact?
thank you. I think that brings up a great point. So the statute's very clear that we can't look simply at one factor at the exclusion of all factors. So I think what you're referencing, Your Honor, is factor 12, which is how the parties cooperate and make decisions. And that's part of the flaw that the trial court and the custody evaluation in this matter looked at. They relied on WAPTA v. WAPTA 498 Northwestern 2nd 478, which says that joint legal custody should be granted only where the parents can cooperatively deal with parenting decisions. So what that is saying and what the trial court relied upon is simply we can only look at factor 12, we can't look at the other factors. And that's part of the flaw with the legal custody decision in this matter, that we didn't evaluate all of the factors making a decision for joint legal or
Okay,
soul.
let me clarify that. Are you saying that on the legal custody issue that the court needed to make separate findings on all of the factors?
Correct, and that's the statutory requirement of findings and explanation.
All
That's the
right,
other.
but what's where in the statute or the case law does it say that? I mean, that to me seems duplicitous because we're talking about a set of factors the court decides, and I don't know of any authority that says you have to repeat that same analysis for legal and then repeat the same analysis for physical. So tell me where I'm misguided on that and where we have case law or a statute that says we treat these equally and we have two silos and we make separate determinations as to each.
That's an excellent question. So I'm looking at 518.17, subdivision one, parents B. These are some guidance for how the court should look at making these custody and parenting time decisions. And if we look at subparagraph one, the court must make detailed findings on each of the factors and explain how each factor led it to its conclusions and determination of custody and parenting time. So if we were simply to say, this favors father or this favors custody being granted, physical custody and legal custody are very different things. So if you don't distinguish the different custody labels in making its explanation, there might be plenty of findings, but it's the explanation which is the issue in this case. Then we're not fulfilling the statutory requirement that's laid out. It might be time consuming, it might be burdensome, but that's what
What
the statute
about
does.
the finding in four, where the court said the tumultuous relationship history between the parties makes any attempt at joint legal decision making unrealistic? While Minnesota presumes joint legal custody, forcing the parties in this case to make decisions jointly would be detrimental to the short and long-term health and well-being of the children. Custody evaluator identified a respondent as capable of making decisions in the best interest of the children, particularly regarding the children's education. Respondent has a demonstrated history of prioritizing the children's interest over her over his personal earnings and approaching parenting with respect and consideration for appellant. Appellant has shown she is unable or unwilling to do the same. It seems to me that's talking about legal custody and it's discussing several of the factors that you want the court to focus in on. So, what's wrong with that?
So I guess my response to that would be, again, the requirement to consider all of the factors. Factor 12 is obviously very important and probably the most important, admittedly, for making legal custody decisions. Do we go joint? Do we rebut the joint legal presumption, or do we look at awarding one of the parents sole legal custody? Absolutely, that's important. But again, the statutory language is very clear. We must, the court must consider and explain each of the factors. And blanket statements of all the factors have been considered is insufficient. The statute requires all the factors to be considered and evaluated.
Do you contest any of the factual findings the district court made relevant to the credibility of your client?
Well, Your Honor, the court has obviously broad discretion in making credibility determinations. Obviously those are difficult to challenge in an appellate process. The appellant here is describing, in terms of, parenting time, custody, that there's some facts and things in the best interest analysis which did favor her, which the court failed to recognize or consider. One example is that there's non-joined children of the mother. There wasn't a consideration of those relationships in determining, where the children will be for parenting time. And when looking at the whole of the decision, everything went against the appellant, and that there are some considerations, potentially, of things that are outside of the factors, in making that analysis. And moving on, adopted the custody evaluation as to legal custody. And just to briefly recap that, the custody evaluator said that there must be a recommendation for sole to one parent. And I'd reiterate that reliance on that custody evaluation without proper explanation doesn't follow the statutory requirement of all the factors being considered. Now, moving on to physical custody and parenting time. In this circumstance, there was a recommendation for joint physical custody. and the trial court did not follow that recommendation. And the appellant would argue that there was an insufficient explanation for why that recommendation was not followed. And in those circumstances, if you look at the Laver case, 360 Northwestern 2nd, 472, what we look at there is there's a heightened requirement for particularized findings. So there must be a clear explanation of why physical custody would not be appropriate. And one of the fundamental issues with the parenting time that's awarded in this circumstance is there's a lot of discussion about the impact of the children's academics during the school year. And the court made a decision of reducing from an equal parenting time schedule that the parents were currently at to one that was significantly reduced because of academic reasons. Now, the court didn't consider, well, if we're trying to maximize parenting time, what about the summer months? There was no consideration to that fact. It simply went straight to, that the impact of the children's academics without finding other ways to maximize parenting time for the parent for the children to have both parents in their life as much as possible. Now, moving to child support, there was an imputation of mother having business income. The court made a finding of $1,000 a month of income for a dog business. And there was no discussion of ordinary business expenses. There was not appropriate facts in the record to reach that conclusion. Likewise, for the appellant's bonus and overtime income, there was not sufficient findings to reach that threshold pursuant to the statute for making that as part of income for child support purposes. There appears to be an agreement or a concession from the respondent on the calculation of back child support owed to the appellant. That appears not to be contested. And then finally, when looking at the child tax exemptions, the appellant would argue that there was insufficient findings under the factors under 518A.38, subdivision 7, parents B, for allocating the child tax exemptions. So with that, I would ask if the court had any further questions for me.
Okay. Do you wish to conclude or?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So at this time, seeing no additional questions, we will reset the clock and we will turn to counsel for respondent for the next word. Please remember to introduce yourself and identify your clients at the beginning.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Mark Rarick. I represent the respondent, Ryan Gary Sanford, in this matter. The trial court's finding of fact number 5 provides a roadmap for the trial court's order. The trial court voiced concerns about the mother's credibility, destructive behavior, inability to prioritize or accurately identify the children's needs, and the risk of harm if mother continues her interference with the father-child relationship. And the trial court summarized in that finding of fact, the court is concerned about the cumulative effect, negative effect of such behavior on the children's well-being. The point there that the trial court did not base its decisions on one particular factor or one particular finding, but rather the overall set of facts that was presented during the trial. And these themes are repeated through the trial court's detailed findings, which include multiple examples. The appellant does not claim that the trial court got the facts wrong. They do not claim that the trial court made findings unsupported by the record. So the question for this court is based upon the entire record in the trial court's detailed findings. Can this court form a definite and firm conviction that a mistake was made? With regard to legal custody, let me first address the appellant's claim that the trial court did not evaluate the statutory factors correctly. 518.17 does not set forth separate factors for legal and fiscal custody. The statute sets forth the factors to consider for purposes of determining issues of, quote, custody and parenting time, unquote. And in fact, many of the best interest factors in the statute apply to both legal and fiscal custody to varying degrees. And so it is reasonable and appropriate for the trial court to address in one conversation both analyses. The statute, of course, requires the trial court to make detailed findings, and the trial court did that. We set forth in respondent's brief, we cite many examples of the trial court's findings that apply specifically to legal custody, and I won't go through those with you. The trial court did explain how it arrived at its conclusion. I note finding of fact 32. The trial court said Ms. Melanacker's evaluation, as well as credible trial testimony, supports father's portrayal of events and circumstances, highlights concerns regarding the mother's care, and emphasized the importance of father having sole decision-making authority. The trial court followed that up with a detailed analysis of the best interest factors in its conclusions of law. And I note in conclusion of law number 4, the trial court specifically says, as discussed more thoroughly below, the best interests of the children are served by granting father sole legal custody. And then what immediately follows in that court order is a detailed discussion regarding the best interest factors. Finding of fact 32 contradicts the appellant's claim that the trial court merely adopted the custody evaluator's recommendations. In fact, the trial court made its own substantial body of findings, and nothing in the trial court's order supports the claim that the trial court merely adopted the custody evaluator's recommendation without further thought. With regard to this argument that the trial court focused only on factor 12, which is the ability of the parties to cooperate. Well, first of all, the trial court did cite case law that suggests that when parties are unable to cooperate, that that joint legal custody is not appropriate. But let me say two things. Number one, the facts here go well beyond a lack of ability to cooperate. There are examples of willful interference with parenting, unwillingness to share information regarding the children's medical care and education. There was manipulation of the children, false allegations against the father made to the children. And of course, appellant herself refused to consider joint legal custody. But we disagree that the trial court focused solely on that 12th factor. A plain reading of the trial court's order says otherwise. And the trial court gives multiple examples of appellant making poor decisions regarding education, healthcare, and again, that unwillingness to share information. With regard to the argument that the custody evaluator applied the wrong legal standard in recommending sole legal custody, We dispute that the custody evaluator applied the wrong legal standard to begin with. The custody evaluator acknowledged the presumption of joint legal custody, but when asked whether parties who don't communicate can share joint legal custody, her response was, quote, some can and some can't. It depends on those situations. But here you have parties, in particular the mother, who is unwilling to share joint legal custody.
Counsel, I was wondering if you could respond to two points Mr. Engel made, one relating to the parenting time issue in the non-academic months, the summer. He's suggesting the district court erred when it didn't make accounting for that. And then second, the arguments on the imputed income to Mr. Engel's client.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. Your Honor, with regard to the summer, first of all, the trial court has no obligation to expand parenting time during the summer. It has broad discretion to fashion a schedule that's in the children's best interest. And many findings made by the trial court apply year round. In finding of fact 31, the trial court goes into detail listing the many concerns that apply to joint legal custody versus sole. And then ends with this statement, the credible testimony, accepted evidence, custody evaluation, and the court's own observations make it clear that mother should not have lengthy, uninterrupted periods of parenting time. So while the trial court did mention education and the school year, at that point in the trial court's order, the trial court is describing why we're going to delay the new schedule until the end of the summer when the school year begins. But in that finding of fact in particular, the court states why long interrupted times are not appropriate and why that parenting schedule should apply year round. Your Honor, with respect to your question regarding the business income, the trial court here was faced with a situation where, as described in the court order, the appellant deliberately withheld financial information. There was substantial testimony regarding her business sales, both while the parties were together and after. She refused to answer discovery. Her tax returns, even during times when she admitted to that she had this business, she didn't, as set forth in the trial court's order, she did not acknowledge that income on her tax returns. So the trial court was left with, I think, doing the best it could with the information available. There was credible testimony by the respondent regarding these business sales, and the trial court adopted that figure of $1,000.
I think it's clear in your paperwork, but you do agree that there was that typographical error, that arithmetic error as far as back support?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, with regard to the argument that the parties pled joint legal custody, I'll note that 518.17 creates a rebuttable presumption upon the request of either or both parties. And by the time we get to the trial, actually through the entire custody evaluation and the trial, both parties made clear that they were seeking sole legal custody. And the trial court at conclusion of law number three cites that. And in fact, in a footnote, the trial court states, though the parties initially requested joint custody, testimony indicated neither party believes joint custody to be appropriate. I'd like to turn briefly to the issue of physical custody The appellate court is aware, there's scant, if any, room for the appellate court to question the district court's balancing of best interest factors. The trial court did not disregard the custody evaluator's recommendations. But let me make the following three points. The trial court is not bound by the recommendations of the evaluation, of course. And the trial court made particularized findings regarding each of the best interest factors. If you look on the scoreboard, the trial court explicitly determined seven best interest factors favored father, while the rest were neutral. And again, I'm not going to get into all those findings, but let me also point out the timing of the trial. The custody evaluation was completed in August of 2022. And in the evaluator's report, she noted concerns regarding the mother's behavior. And the evaluator stated, if this continues to be a problem, the parenting time schedule may need to be adjusted. And it did continue. By the time of trial at the beginning of 2024, the record contained multiple examples of appellant's continued bad behavior. And so the trial court made its own determinations that are supported in the record.
Before you move on from this, so as I understand it, appellant agrees and said so much in their brief, or said as much in their brief, that they understand that the district court wasn't bound by the custody evaluator's recommendations. I think their concern is that it wasn't explained in the order. They assert that it wasn't explained in the order why the custody evaluator's recommendation wasn't followed. Can you just speak to that specific component of their argument?
Your Honor, I don't think that the trial court in its order came right out and said, this is why the custody evaluator is wrong on this particular issue, or why the trial court is not adopting that particular recommendation. But it's difficult not to read the entire body of the trial court's order and not extract from the findings and conclusions of the trial court why the trial court did not adopt that particular recommendation. And again, I'll just go back to the timing. The record, including substantial exhibits of emails between the parties, between the time of the evaluation and the time of the trial, support the trial court's reasoning that joint physical custody was no longer appropriate. So in conclusion, the trial court conducted an exhaustive analysis of the best interest of the children as it relates to both legal custody and physical custody. And there is no clear error that the trial court erred in its findings. Again, to use the trial court's own description, it was the cumulative effect of all of the evidence that was presented at trial. And I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now turn back to counsel for appellant for 5 minutes. And Mr. Engel, the clock is reset. You may begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I would like to respond to counsel's argument, respondent's argument regarding finding five. This again is one of those blanket statements that the court's considered everything, we've evaluated everything. That's not what the statute says. The statute says we must consider each and every factor for custody and parenting time. An appellant would argue that analysis of custody should also distinguish between physical custody and legal custody, as they're very different things and very different impacts on the children. As to the summer parenting time discussion, appellant would argue that the court must consider in factor 10, maximizing parenting time and the benefit or detriment to the children And that analysis was incomplete because it was just about school, the detriment regarding school. What about the benefit of summer parenting time with their mother? Does that, you know, without that school consideration, is that in the children's best interests? Finally, respondent makes arguments that I would call it a penumbra argument for physical custody.
All right, could we go back to the parenting time? What about respondent's argument in the last sentence of finding 31? The credible testimony, accepted evidence, custody evaluation, and the court's own observations make it clear that mothers should not have lengthy, uninterrupted periods of parenting time. Why is that not good enough in terms of the summer? I mean, the discourse is saying, you know, summer, winter, or fall, she should not have lengthy, uninterrupted periods of parenting time. Why is that not enough?
So, Your Honor, you could look at a number of different options because the analysis in factor 10 of the court was, you know, the impact of the school. But if the concern was about not having too much, you know, of a lengthy duration, like a week on, week off parenting time schedule, you know, what if, you know, 2 days on, two days off? There was no consideration for something like that, if that would work, when those educational concerns aren't at play. So that's my point, or appellant's point, as to the maximizing parenting time factor. As to physical custody, counsel makes an argument that if you look at the totality of everything, that the court here should make inferences that there's sufficient findings and explanation for why the custody evaluation was not followed. I think the statute makes it clear that, again, each factor must be considered and evaluated, and there should be clarity from the court of why the custody evaluation, the person who saw the children interact with their mother, saw the children interact with their father, why is that not being followed? Why is that not in the best interest instead of trying to make inferences through all the different findings? There should be clarity of why it's not being followed and why a reduction of parenting time from the evaluation is happening, why that's in the best interest of the children when considering all the factors and evaluating all the factors. That will conclude appellant's argument unless there's further questions.
All right, I don't see any. Thank you so much. Thank you to both counsel for your argument here today, as well as the briefing. We do find that helpful, and the matter is submitted. We will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe. Thank you.
Thank you.